Great. Representative Bly, call the meeting to order, and we'll start with the fiscal note requirements modified. I just came, the previous meeting I had had a horrific fiscal note story, so it's a good time to have this bill.
Yes.
Okay, I'll move the bill with the $2,815. Okay, I'll move the A-10-2409 to get the bill in the shape of the... Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay.
The amendment, I added the word direct before the word net on the lease line 1.9 and 1.10, which says that it's like the net increase in number of jobs held by the residents. And the reason for that that change is that every economist knows that every economic action has a reaction, and these reactions themselves cause other reactions. After calculating this ripple effect is both time-consuming and controversial. And by direct effect, I mean only the jobs that will be immediately created or eliminated by proposed legislation. For example, the bill will result in 25 jobs at a particular state agency. Then only the 25 jobs need to be reported under the conditions of the bill. I think if there's anything that we can all agree upon, it's that good jobs are the foundation of our economy. And sadly, I'm sure we can also agree that those jobs are much more difficult for Minnesotans to find in recent times. We have before us a serious budget crisis that brings forth many proposals to cut funding. At the same time, we recognize that at least some of those cuts will put us in the position of laying off workers. This causes untold hardship for those who are suddenly jobless in a high unemployment economy. It also has the perverse effect of making our budget problems worse, for the layoffs we mandate result in lower tax revenues for those people who were laid off. Too often, we are asked to vote on budget measures where only the dollars were presented. I would like us to have enough information to include jobs in our deliberations. All other things the same, I would prefer a budget measure that preserves more jobs over one that eliminates more jobs. The bill I propose allows us to include jobs in our deliberations, and that is all it does and all it is intended to do. I have no intention of making our work more difficult or of requiring unnecessary paperwork. I urge your support of this bill. These are difficult times, and we need to be fully informed before making decisions that dramatically affect the lives of the military. So, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I'm wondering, I think there's a good value to this, but I'm wondering if we could maybe just take it a step further, because I think there have been questions in regards to this before. If you might consider it a friendly amendment to just on line 2 or 3, put total number of private and public sector jobs on both 1.8 and 1.9. And then down in, wherever you have the word jobs, total number of private and public sector jobs.
Let's see, we deleted 9 and 10.
Well, then just line 1.8.
Thank you. My concern is that it may be such a difficult number to come up with. I wanted to focus on what we could get information about it. Relatively reasonable. There may be debate about the effects on private jobs as well. There's no doubt there are effects, and those are important numbers to have. My concern was it might overburden the people who are coming up with those numbers.
Madam Chair.
Representative Giffon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm not sure what the difference between just saying jobs and just putting the two words in means.
That's right. It doesn't do.
Anyway, Representative Kipman.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I was listening and trying to two people at once. I think the, you know, if you want to make it even simpler, because it's more easy to calculate the number of public jobs in the state. In other words, public government employees, they're usually in the FTEs, and we usually get those kind of reports. And de facto, there may be a difference, but I think nonetheless it is a valid consideration because that has been part of our discussion of are we creating jobs and expanding government? Are we creating jobs in the private sector? But Representative Holberg has the baby, so she may not be able to get the attention as well as I wanted. If she had a comment, it looked like.
Well, Madam Chair, the bill as written just says jobs, so I took it that it meant both.
Yeah. But if people would like to expand to specifically state it, and there is, I think, some value, it's kind of what I think there is some value in doing a separation on that. I don't think it adds. I don't think it is any problem because you really can get the public jobs very easily, and then if you're getting the total jobs, you just the other is the private jobs. I would suggest that you ought to accept it.
I will.
And I intend to work on anyone else. Representative Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that's a good idea. I'm just curious why you, when you answered the question, why you said only the jobs. You kind of implied it was only public sector jobs, which I'm just curious as to why you had that reaction. I mean, I guess maybe it doesn't matter now if we put this on, but I read it to be just any job, but when you answered, you implied that your original intent or you were thinking it was just public jobs. I'm just wondering if you could just further clarify.
I think in my thinking about bringing the bill forward, I was initially concerned about the public jobs, but in reflecting on the chair's comments, I think she's right, and I don't think we do it in the simplest way that it is here, and the assumption that it doesn't.
Madam Chair, I think it always is a challenge when you have something like this brought up in regards to the initial response. And I just wanted to clarify that that was 1.8 and 1.11, not 1.8 and 1.9. It was 1.8 and 1.11, just to clarify that.
Is there any more comment on this amendment? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Meyer. I'm sorry, I just was dealing with a health insurance problem, dang denying of claims again. But when you're at, just correct me if I'm wrong, it's on line point 1.8 that you said cite the direct net increase or decrease in the total private or public jobs, number of jobs in the state. Is that what the amendment is?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Bingham, my amendment did not have to do with direct. That was a previous motion.
Okay.
And is in your packet in regards to that, and then deleting 9s, 9 and 10, okay?
Okay.
And then my subsequent motion was to only in the total number of public or private sector jobs in the state on line 1.8 and 1.11.
Okay, my question to you is, have you discussed with staff or with anybody about the delaying of the fiscal note for that? Because I think I get really frustrated when we're trying to figure out how much some of these policies will cost or whatever, and it just seems like having the private sector request on it would take time and possibly even more money to obtain that information. So I was just wondering if you had talked to staff about that.
Madam Chair and Representative Bingham, no, I have not. This is an oral amendment made here this morning. However, if, as I said when I first proposed it, if you are already calculating jobs and you're already going through that, just keeping track of which are public and which are private is already built into all the proposals anyway. At least the public side is already built into it. Mm-hmm. That's what we get routinely. So I think adding on a marginal of what's left, you might say, I think is just a marginal good. And I think it gives, as the representative said when he testified, that it gives us good information to base our decisions on.
Sure. One more question.
If you're going to do it anyway, let's do it.
Sure. One more question. Madam Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, what compels the private industry to give us these numbers, out of curiosity? What would compel them? Are they required to do so? I mean, what authority do we have to tell them to give us the information?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Bingham, I don't see this as a matter of compelling anybody. This is a matter of the agency when they are putting forward a fiscal note. They know if this is going to be road construction, that they can include it in their bid or in their specs or something like that. I mean, these are not people who aren't familiar with what these things require. And again, it's an estimate.
Okay.
You know, we do have a little problem because there's a fiscal note and we don't have any money.
Yeah.
My intention, I'm comfortable passing this on to finance, which is dealing with the total bill for this area and other areas. I have problems with this fiscal note right away. I mean, I think if they have to do the amounts, I don't understand how it's not just a seat of a pants calculation as to what the number of jobs are, because I don't know how you get the amounts without knowing roughly what a project's going to cost. I mean, the first time they do this exercise, you know, it just seems to me that it's part of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, is the fiscal note, seeing as how Representative Bly took out lines 1.9 and 1.10, it seems to me that would be the vast majority of what the fiscal note costs anyway. I'm wondering if staff could maybe, I guess we probably don't have anybody to comment on that, but I'm guessing that would be because it looked like calculating the jobs held by, out of state. So I'm just wondering if that was the great cost, or maybe Representative Bly, if you could comment on if that's why you took that out in the first place.
Hey, Madam Chair. Thank you. You know, when I see some of these calculations about jobs anyway, I hear numbers thrown around, this will, that jobs. I really didn't think this was going to be a big deal because it seemed like everybody was already throwing around the numbers. Why not at least get them in this sort of way? And I think that will be helpful. Oh, it's good you have a microphone finally. Thank you.
Okay.
Any further questions on the bill as amended?
Would that delete the fiscal note?
We put it on. Yes, we did.
Do we have an amendment?
We did vote.
What on the First Amendment?
We voted on the Bly Amendment. Did we? I don't believe we voted.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. We did not. Okay.
Exactly. I think staff would. If I could ask for staff to actually read what that amendment is.
The amendment. Send it back. Representative Kiffmeyer, why don't you repeat it, and then...
Madam Chair, before net insert direct, I just...
No, that's okay.
I know, but I had to read it myself, too, with the amendments, so I made sure that my amendment made sense.
Okay.
The direct net increase or decrease in a total number of public or private sector jobs. So between of and jobs, it would be public or private sector. And that would be the same for line 1.11 between of and jobs.
Okay. Madam Chair.
I think you want and.
Yes. I think, again, okay. I'm going to ask, because yes. I think that you might yes. need and.
Mm-hmm.
So if Mark Shepherd, maybe if Mr. Shepherd could just talk about that amendment and make sure it's clear
yes.
for everyone. Please.
Madam Chair and members, I think that the comment is a good one, and I see Representative Kiffmeyer nodding, so I think it would be best on page 8, after the word of, to insert public and private sector, and then on page 1, line 11, after the word of, insert public and private sector.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is definitely... makes it more clear and complies with the intent that I think we have. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd.
And of course, one of the things that's just been pointed out to me is that this fiscal note, this cost is for all agencies and all funds, so you wouldn't require a new appropriation.
Kind of And Madam Chair, with this, since line 1.9 and 10 were eliminated, as I understand, that had more of the costs involved, that maybe there might be an updated fiscal note for the next committee, maybe?
Hate to think how long it will take for us to get it, but I think even we'll say it's decreased, you know, it's that it's probably decreased with taking those numbers out. Did Representative Bly, did you have anyone give you any indication of it when you took those lines out?
No,
how that affected the fiscal note? Is there anyone here from finance who can talk about how it affects the fiscal note? Just say who you are.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Donna Smokewitz from Minnesota Management Budget. We prepared the fiscal note under the assumption that it would be collecting private sector job data. That's why there's additional costs. We already collect data on public sector jobs. When we expand programs or create new ones, we address all of that in the fiscal note today. So this was really cost related to collecting the private sector jobs data. With the amendment to delete those two lines, there's still going to be some costs. You know, that's going to remove maybe a piece of them, but we're still going to have to reach out to those same sources to collect the other elements that are added. So I think the cost would stay about what it is or may go down a little bit.
Okay. But the other point we wanted to make is that $29,000 is for all agencies and all funds. So I think we're at the level that people want to be able to. Anyway, we'll let finance, as working with the major big budget bills, also think about this. Okay. We need to vote on the amendment.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
And then I have a question.
Okay.
After the amendment.
No, any more questions about the amendment? All those in favor of the Kiffmeyer amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question now about lines 1.14 to 1.16 on the fiscal note. If that is a significant cost to the preparation.
Madam Chair, Representative, did you amend that line at all? Here today,
no.
I came in late. I know in the Senate we removed half of that language there. So to answer your question, we do the first part of that already, number 7. We estimate the effect on federal funds and any federal requirements, including but not limited to the maintenance of effort requirements. That's part of the process today. Again, as it relates to program changes at DHS or health or wherever, we record any federal impacts are reflected in the fiscal note. It would really be the second half of that, the state loan repayment obligations associated with borrowing for federal funds. That would be new information that we would be seeking. So I think that that's where the cost would lie on that section.
Okay.
With that report that that's one of the changes in the Senate language, I guess I would accept that and ask for an author's amendment to delete the lines which you just suggested.
Okay.
Okay,
do you
want and to also put it in the shape of the Senate.
Okay, do you want to state that again?
Sure, I think if you inserted a period after requirements and deleted the rest of line 15 and all of 16.
Okay.
I believe that's what.
So we're deleting and state loan repayment obligations associated with borrowing from federal funds.
Yes.
Okay, and you would like that?
Yes.
I'll move that amendment then. Puts the bill in, cuts the cost down again, and also puts the bill in line with the Senate. All those in, any questions about that? Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name from finance.
Monkwitz.
Monkwitz. Right, Monkwitz. All right. So I guess my question on that part is, our state loan repayment, does that have any, to tie into what our bond rating is? Do we need to know this information to to make sure that we're not exceeding our bond limit? I mean, isn't there some value in actually leaving this? I just, if you could comment on, and I know there might be a cost, but I'm also concerned overall about our bond rating, and this might be helpful to have that information. So if you could comment.
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative. I'm not an expert in this area. This is really, the way I read this language, it's for agencies that borrow money from the federal government. Like, the first thing that comes to my mind is DEED in the unemployment compensation. They sometimes have to borrow money from the federal government to cover those costs. And so I think this is directly related to loan payments around issues like that. I don't think that it really has an effect on our bonds or those that we're selling, but again, I'm not really the expert at it, so
I can look into that too.
Okay.
Okay, again, it's not a bonding issue, it's just a conduit.
I was just wondering if it affected bonding at all.
Mm-hmm.
Got here too late. Representative
Mason. Madam Chair, whoever would like to answer it, we were talking before about what it would do about getting the fiscal notes that we are asking for. With all the changes, et cetera, is that going to, have we limited the number of the impact on the fiscal notes, or how much time do you think will needed
Chair,
to do this?
We talked a little bit about it in our assumptions that we thought with having to gather these additional data elements that there could be further delay on some fiscal notes. And that's what you're asking about, right? We know, we've heard that there's sometimes delays in getting fiscal notes timely. We expect that this could add to that, and they could be take a little longer because of us trying to gather this data. I think that we're going to have to reach out to folks. You know, we can build something in as being a requirement of a project that they provide this data to us. That may not always happen. And so we would be pursuing that data, which may take us some time to gather that.
Madam Chair, just to follow, are we talking days or are we talking maybe even weeks?
Madam Chair and Representative, you know, it depends. If we're successful at getting the data on that first phone call, it would take a few minutes probably, but I don't expect that's going to be the case for most of these. It will be phone calls, it will be conversations asking what we're really after, it will be that entity trying to collect the data. So I think that we said we expected it would take about an hour per case. But, you know, some could take 5 minutes and some could take 3 days.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other? Sorry, we do have a truncated meeting because of caucuses today, so.
Any questions about this bill?
Madam Chair, I just wanted clarification again.
Wait, we need to vote. I guess we could have incorporated it, but let's vote on the blind. on the. The new motion.
I know we've done the Bly amendment, the Kipmeyer amendment. We have
now we're doing the second, this last
this
amendment.
This is a con amendment then?
I guess it's a con amendment.
It is? Okay.
Yes.
And so we're.
I guess we could have let. Well, let's just vote on it instead of have the author incorporate. Okay. All those in favor of that amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, now the bill is in the shape you want it. It's in the same shape as the Senate does. It goes on to finance, and they'll deal with it from there. Okay, any other discussions on the bill? All those in favor of the motion to pass, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
So, next one we need to do is one that we pushed off from last time, Representative Lilly's bill.
Madam Chair, I can move House File 2758 for you.
Yes, Representative Bigham moves that House File 2758 be recommended to pass. Pass to finance, I guess.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I understand today is a very special day, and that was brought up. I believe we didn't get a truffle roll, so.
You got to go get them.
Somewhat problematic.
Right over there, so go get them before you leave.
the committee will indulge me for a second, I'd just like to speak about your chairwoman for a second. She's going to suffer through this. She's quite an amazing person. I don't know if everybody at the table knows she's done 50 marathons. And I've run three, and about a year ago, my goal was to run every day, and the chairwoman said, oh, that's... So at the end of the year, I was kind of bragging. I ran every day, and she goes, oh, that's no big deal. When I was your age, I ran 3,023 miles. And I said, took me a little while, and I called her some names. So she comes in the next day with her book, and she actually had journaled. If you do the math on that, that's about 8 miles a day. She's quite a hockey player as well, and we this week we had a... Often she's in the corner with the governor, but this week she happened to be in the corner with a fellow representative here to my left, Carla Bingham, and we had a little contact. And I'm not saying who won, but they a little swinging as they were getting up.
But, that's not true. There was no swinging.
A little bit of swinging. Phyllis Kahn, to her credit, every time you go by her on the hockey rink, she just, even if you're on the same team, I often wear the same color jersey, she'll still, if you bump into her, she'll give you like a little shot. So she's always always swinging.
That's because I'm so good-natured and kind in the legislature.
But in honor of your birthday, and because a lot of people probably don't know that she's a physicist. Top of all these other accomplishments. So I just thought I'd bring some science to the room.
Yes.
Just kidding. Madam Chair and members. House File 2758 essentially ratifies the contracts that were negotiated between the governor and the work groups for the state of Minnesota. These, I'm the chair of the subcommittee employee relations, and so I'm carrying the bill forward here. I have Mr. Hubinger here with me today. Just so you know, I think in your packets you might find some information. There's quite a few different work groups. We can, I don't know if you want the long version or the short version, but essentially things are staying where they're at for the contracts. I think for some of my friends on the Republican side, they get kind of excited about the graph that's on the back page. I just keep in mind I didn't negotiate these contracts. This graph would not look like this if I was negotiating it, but this seems to bring some joy to the Republicans on the so I don't know if you have any questions or...
I think instead of go through this paragraph by paragraph, as it did pass through the Government Operations Committee, and I think I think it would be better if Representative Billy and Representative Bingham responded to any questions.
Well, Madam Chair, I think the biggest thing is we value our government employees and all of these employees. We certainly do value them and value their work. And I know you worked hard on the negotiations and all that, but the annual decrease is 5% less for the private sector. So, you know, even though I look at these and look at these contracts and such, we still do see... they're either flat or there is some increases to them in regards to all of these contracts. Is not that a fair summation when I look at the graph and the chart here?
Madam Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, I yes, that is the case. I think the contracts are, in my understanding, maybe you can clarify, but are the same unless there are steps that are in some of the cases. So they'll be flat. So
my point is just that the private sector is, you know, taking a big, huge hit. So while I appreciate that we always want to, you know, do that, just remembering, though, that many of the same employees in the private sector are without a job or have taken, and again, that's an average of 5%. Many have done as well. But appreciate your efforts. I know that it's a real challenge in doing these things, but just wanted to make that comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I assume, Representative Lilly, you prefer that I didn't present my amendment to add domestic partnerships to all of these contracts following Representative Kiffmeyer's lead, because so many of our private sector companies have done that.
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Well, maybe we'll wait. We'll wait till the floor. Okay. Representative Bing.
Thank you. And I just want members to know I'm really not crabby today, but what I would like to point out is this month, this, and I feel like I'm being overly mean to my good friend, Representative Kiffmeyer, but the money in the adjustments in this is absorbed through their base, and they have to come up with the money on their own and make the adjustments within the departments to come up with any sort of merit increases, step increases, or whatnot. So I just wanted that to know too. It's not like they're getting new money for these.
Madam Chair. Yes, to my good friend Representative Bigham. We can play hockey maybe sometime too.
You're invited Sunday night.
Yeah, we need more women on the team. Yeah. Representative Kahn always says that.
Wonderful. I'll be glad to consider that. Never having played hockey in my life, you could really.
Please come then.
The goal is very low.
Can I bring my coach though?
Sure.
My husband is a great hockey player, so. At any rate, I do appreciate that, and that is good information to know that the agencies, all those, are absorbing that, because I think that is beneficial to know that. Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions on this?
Okay. Madam Chair.
Does this account for all of the settlements, or they're still outstanding? I'm kind of wondering what's coming in the future years. Kind of curious as the whole process, because as Representative Kiffmeyer conveyed my feelings that it's hard to see these increases when the economy is what it is, and two of my neighbors have lost their jobs, and a lot of people have taken 10-15% pay cuts. So I guess I'm wondering if there are any outstanding and what kind of the plan is for going forward. And then I have a second question too that I'll ask at the same time. Since there's nothing that I can do about this here, this might be maybe a better question for the chair. Why does this come before me to ratify? Because it's almost insulting that I can't make any changes whatsoever. Because every time I ask a question, it's this has been collectively bargained, so take it. And I feel like it's we're nothing but a rubber stamp. And I'm just wondering. Why do I have to look at this when I can't do anything about it?
Well,
anyway.
Well, we have had one occasion when changes were made, when they ratified domestic partnerships and the legislature took that out. And so, which is why I think we ought to put it back in to do that. But, I think if you have something that you would seriously.
So I can change these numbers and get a vote on that?
No.
You could try.
It has come before us.
Well, maybe if you could just answer that.
There is one. That is the one example that I know. There may be others that didn't pay attention to.
Maybe you could just talk about the other part of the question, just kind of if there are other settlements that are outstanding and the process for going forward, or just talk about the process.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Pepin, these are all of the contracts that are outstanding for 2008. So, again, there will be another cycle, and just because we're not in session all the time, actually each contract could go through if we were in session standing alone and become law. But so it's just a matter of convenience to help the process that we meet and that we have these and that we process them when we're not in session. So just want to mention some other members that are on the committee. Representative Hillstrom is also on the subcommittee, Employee Relations, and Representative Bingham, and then Representative Drazkowski and Representative Lanning are also for the House, and then there's five senators as well.
Was Representative Drazkowski the one wanting to make these increases?
Madam Chair and Representative Pepin, and to respect to Representative Drazkowski, he actually was a solid no vote at every step of the way. So, and I I kept trying to help him by telling him that it was the governor's initiative and negotiated, but that didn't seem to help.
That's worse for him.
Okay. Any other discussions on the bill? Okay. Representative Bingham renews her motion that it is passed and passed on to finance. And Representative Pepin and I will both prepare our oh, I don't know. Well, as long as we're talking about private sector comparisons, mine ought to just zip right out. Okay, all those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Happy birthday.
Oh, please take your science experiment with you. No. Sorry. And please take some truffles. Okay. Representative Hillstrom, this is a bill we passed once before, so hopefully we can do it. Governor vetoed it, and I think you're going to tell us why, what the difference is between this bill and what the governor vetoed and who's on board and all that good stuff.
Madam Chair and members, this is the same bill the governor vetoed. We continue to have discussions. We continue to work to try to some of the folks on board. We now have the credit unions who have come to support the bill, which is very exciting. But since the last time you saw this bill, 14 other states have started doing the very same thing. We could have been first, and instead now we are following. Members, we have two types of foreclosure in this state. We have foreclosures through the courts, and we have foreclosure through advertisement. If you go to court to foreclose, you already have to do some alternative form, some alternative dispute resolution. However, this foreclosure by advertisement does not have anything. And so that's really who this takes care of. And it just states that before you can foreclose, you have to go to this mediation. Madam Chair, I know that the county recorders are currently opposed to the bill. They want to come and testify in opposition. But members, what you should know is that we started off with a straight fee on all records. Everybody paid the same amount, and it was this body and the other body that chose to make the fee look the way it does now. I'm fine with either way, but again, it was this body chose to do the fee on certain documents. So otherwise, the bill is pretty much the same, and we continue to have discussions because ultimately the goal is to have a bill the governor can sign. That's it.
Problem with the fiscal, this seems to be a savings in part of it, but then the problem with the fiscal that comes in the Attorney General's office. Is there anyone who can discuss that?
Do you have a copy of the fiscal note, Madam Chair? I'd just like to see the current one that you're looking at. Madam Chair, I believe that there are different assumptions in the numbers of foreclosures that were used on this. Our assumptions, do you want to, I can let Mr. Frichte talk about the assumptions that we're making.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kermit Frichte. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Attorney General's office. Madam Chair, to answer your question, the Attorney General's office assumed 20,000 foreclosures with a filing fee for a notice of pendency or notice of list pendants of $125. That's where we get to the $2.5 million. I believe that the difference was another department assumed 23,000 foreclosures, and that's where you get the difference. So, in fact, the Attorney General's office assumed less foreclosures, a more conservative estimate, but I think it's important to point out with this bill, once the money runs out, there will be no more mediations. It's a first-come, first-served bill. So if there is no more money, there are no more mediations, and the money does not go directly to the Attorney General's office. It goes to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and the Attorney General will then have to request funds to pay for any administrative mailings, administrative staff costs, and the mediators themselves. It's an invoicing system, if you will. Oh, and one more thing to add. If there is extra money when the bill sunsets, it does return to the general fund.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hillstrom, you mentioned that the governor sent a veto letter, which I have, and he has 4 points that he takes issue with, including a fee of $125, which includes those who do not receive mediation. He talks about having the Office of Administrative Hearings instead of the AG's office do the appointing, and then a couple other things. He points out that having the mediator decide who is eligible is he says it's nonsensical. And I'm just wondering how many, this is a rather large bill, and I'm not overly familiar with this area, and I'm wondering if you could comment on how many of the governor's recommendations you have addressed or have changed, or, you know, if you haven't, why, that type of thing.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, just let me move the bill, which wasn't okay.
All right, Madam Chair. Actually, we have not made any changes because it has already passed the bodies, and we want to make sure that we actually get an agreement. And so, you know, if you make one change, then sometimes other things pop up. And so while we continue to have conversations, I don't want them changing it one direction in the Senate and changing in a different direction in the House. So we're really trying to have a bill at the end that we can get signed and that people can agree with. And so we really have been moving this along and not making too many changes because we don't want to have more problems popping up. We just want to try to address the ones that we have.
So, Madam Chair, so how are you going to get, if you make no changes, how are you going to get the, what's your strategy to get the governor to sign it if you make no changes, or is it to maybe override, or what's the strategy then?
Madam Chair, there will be no attempt to override, but it's my understanding that there's going to be an amendment probably in the Senate. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it does. So
you're open to changes, just not yet?
Yes, we're open to changes, and we'll continue talking.
As I said, we did, some of these bills that come back, we just sat out again. We did pass this last year. Is there a way, we do have this, is there a way also to make it more revenue neutral? Is that something that we can do in terms of increasing the fees or whatever? Or directing the fees if the fees, you know, so that we can specifically cover the costs?
Madam Chair, there is some language in the bill, I believe, that says that the on line 21.4 and 5, that basically says if the money dries up, it doesn't continue to happen.
Okay, you pointed out that it is that I'm focusing on the costs without realizing that it, other pages show you that it is neutral.
Question, Representative Hillstrom, I assume, I don't know if you can't necessarily speak for the governor's office, but what is, and I don't know if the veto letter says it, but if the objection is to the fee, I mean, it seems to me you're doing the responsible thing with the fee. Is the objection that there shouldn't be a fee, that somehow the Attorney General's office should just eat the cost, or is the objection that it shouldn't even be in the Attorney General's office? What is the fee-based objection that the governor has?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, it's my understanding that part of the objection is only those that benefit from mediation should pay for it.
Okay, so the governor's position is just that it should be that the homeowner somehow should, or the homeowner and the lending institution should somehow.
Mr. Chair and our Madam Chair and Representative Simon, well, actually, we all know that in law we allow banks to charge the homeowner for every expense they have with relationship to foreclosure. So we know that in the event that the fee is divided between the homeowner or the bank, they're going to both, you know, the homeowner's going to ultimately pay, and we know that these filing fees ultimately are going to get passed on to the consumer. So really, the consumer's paying, and it's just a matter of having enough funds available to actually set up a process that can work and not have something. You know, frankly, the federal government has there hasn't been enough resources. There haven't been enough people who have been able to get access to it. And so we actually want a program that works, and this is really modeled after our lending agency.
Okay.
Any
All right, thank you very much. I think the objection more had to do, Madam Chair, with the fact that everybody, whether they used the mediation or not, was paying. And so I think there was more the distinction that, that those who had no need of mediation or weren't doing that. But the question I have in regards to who pays a fee, and in particular, on page 14, at the top, the new language, point 3 down to point 8, I believe this is a fee that would only go to abstract property. And the reason why, and in Minneapolis and some of these other areas, I thought that was kind of interesting because there's torrens and abstract. And it would be an interesting thing if we would only apply this to abstract and not to abstract and torrents if you were going to even do this sort of thing. And maybe someone, it's in the House Research Bill Summary. And the next section does cover it all.
Applies it to torrents. On page 5, there under.
Okay. There it is. I see it on section number 2. I think because it was said in quotes, it looked different, and I looked elsewhere for it, but I didn't see it, so it is both torrents and abstract. But I think the objection is still based upon the fact that everybody's paying for what a few use. And I think our general concept has been to have those who use a service pay for the service. Is that not right? Yep. Isn't that, in essence, the governor's veto letter?
Madam Chair, I believe that that's probably the governor's desire to have those who use it. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I would say in general, that's what we've had in statute all kinds of places is to make sure that, you know, that's been a common theme. Those who use a service pay for the service wherever possible. I think that would be a worthy goal. Whether it's a governor or not, I think it seems like it would be fair.
Follow up to that, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Winkler.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I understand. I mean, as I read this, the fee is paid, or it's additional recorder's fee, when a notice of list pendants is filed. So, first of all, you're only dealing with an increased fee when a foreclosure is basically recorded on the property. So the category of people who would not be using the service but would be paying are those institutions that have filed the notice of foreclosure but the property has been redeemed before you get to the point of mediation?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, in order to go through mediation, a borrower who is being foreclosed on first has to request counseling. There will be some borrowers that do not request counseling. There will be some borrowers who go through counseling but do not request mediation. So it will be the people that financial institutions that are paying are those financial institutions where the borrower does not avail themselves to the programs available.
So, Madam Chair, then it sounds like the lenders are all paying the fee to initiate it in order to create an option for the homeowner to pursue mediation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe also, as stated by Representative Hillstrom, that fee is passed on to people. And so, you know, I don't think we can say, well, the lender pays the fee and ergo doesn't get put on to other people. No, it is. Those who are in very difficult circumstances, all of them, whether they needed to go forward to mediation or not, will pay that fee. That is not just a institutional thing, as I understand from your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question about the community banks. I know in the past they've been in opposition to this, and I know that there's been a little bit of a change, but I'm suspecting that they still are in opposition, unless I hear otherwise.
Madam Chair. Yes, the community bankers are still in opposition. We did add an amendment last year in an attempt to address their issues. If you have fewer than 5 foreclosures in a 12-month cycle, you don't have to do this. And I requested some information from Mr. Skilbred. He replied in the letter. I didn't get the information that I was looking for, so I've got a letter that's getting ready to go back to him. I want to figure out who it is that we haven't taken care of, because frankly, there are some community banks that were part of the problem. The majority of them were not. We want to make sure that we get the folks that have been part of the problem and not get the folks that haven't been.
Staff Winkler has another follow-up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to follow up first, I guess, the money issue. So to make sure I understand, there's a list pendants filed, the recording fee increase goes to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, who holds an account and gets the benefit of the interest or whatever return there might be. And the Attorney General's office, if they receive a request for mediation, then selects a mediator, and I have a follow-up question about how that selection is done. And then the cost of that mediator is essentially billed by the Attorney General's office to MHFA. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Rulinkler, that's correct.
So, Madam Chair, it's not exactly fee is not generating an additional pot of money for the Attorney General's office. It's only for how the basically an invoice, as you said, for the cost of the mediation. And then, because I think that was a concern in the past. Final question is, then how is the mediator chosen?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, the Attorney General has indicated that she's going to essentially put forth a call to service. The mediators, to first use volunteer mediators, if at all possible, retired judges, retired real estate folks, or people that are willing to donate their time through the Bar Association. But it will be people that are experts in finance and negotiation and real estate. It will not be people that are employed by the Attorney General's office in any way.
And Madam Chair, typically if you're in a legal case and you have need for mediation, you get to that stage, the parties agree on the mediator. Is this just going to be an appointment by the Attorney General, or is there some opportunity for the parties to have input as to who the mediator is?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, the parties are also free to select a mediator.
Representative Winkler, it just states that they need to do mediation. If they choose to go to a mediator outside of this process, that can meet the standard. This is saying we're going to provide mediators in the event you don't do it on your own.
But Madam Chair, then the event that they don't choose to do it on their own, then the Attorney General's office is the one that's appointing the mediator because of the way it's financed, essentially. Okay, and I'm
correct.
Could I guess that there's maybe some concern about that, but.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, that was raised.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for getting here late. So, if this ground has been covered, you can just tell me to cover the information offline. But I'm curious if the Bankers Association is present. I have just an overriding question, and that is, how much of what we're attempting to put into statute and prescribe in infinite detail for bureaucratic entities to operate, how much of that is currently happening today freely by virtue of mortgagees and lenders just doing the good things that they would typically do under their current contracts?
Okay. Well, and Mr. Frichte does have a response as well, but
somebody else.
And
gentlemen.
Representative Downey, I just wanted to say that, 14 states are now doing something like this. When we started this process, we would have been first. But many places are doing it, and sometimes the court is just ordering before you can use that process, you must go through a process like this.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, Kermit Frichter from the Attorney General's office. Our office hears every day from people who are unable to reach their lender. There's been a lot of information recently in the news media about the federal programs and the lack of their success. Now, there are more trial modifications being made permanent, but the fact remains that many people cannot get a hold of their lender, or when they do get a hold of them, their documents are lost. And this would simply require that foreclosing lender to have somebody available.
A story in the strip today on that.
Madam Chair, Steve Johnson, Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Bankers Association. I do have a handout from the laws we passed the last 3 years at the Minnesota Legislature. One of those laws passed in 2008 is the pre-foreclosure notice filing. So when there's a foreclosure filed, a counselor is now notified of a person's name, address, and phone number, and then the person being foreclosed on is also notified that they have the right for counseling. And the homeownership center oversees the majority of this counseling, and they've reported at other hearings this year that they've helped thousands of people in foreclosure and helped thousands of people avoid foreclosure. So there's already a state program in place that you passed in 2008, which is cutting edge. I don't know if any other state has done that, that already requires counseling. And Mr. Frickty mentioned the national program, and it did get off to a bumpy start, but if you looked at the December, January, February data, the number of homeowners that are being helped by the national HAMP program, the Obama program, has increased significantly. So I think the laws you passed the last 3 years, including that counseling notice, some of the federal programs in place, there's a lot of things going on already. And the last point is our lenders do work with their borrowers. Foreclosure is their last option, their last resort. They want to keep those customers for life. So there's a lot of things going on voluntarily. So.
Quick follow-up. So I think it's fair to say that any banker, community, or large bank would have no interest in unnecessary foreclosures, and they would do whatever they could to find some way to work those things out. How about in the case where mortgages are sold? Is this either in the experience of the Attorney General's office or perhaps in the, your experience in the market? Does this happen more frequently? Is this really a problem where the originating lender is not actually carrying the mortgage?
Madam Chair, Representative Downing, I do think that when the mortgages are sold, it does complicate the foreclosure process and make it harder to track down who someone is to find the borrower. But as I mentioned, through the counseling programs in Minnesota and the increased activity of the Obama program, I think some of those issues are becoming worked out. So I think it's becoming less of an issue.
Would the Attorney General's office offer a comment on that as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, that is one of the problems we are seeing, that a large percentage of mortgages are not held by a community bank. They're packaged in securities, and you may have, for example, two of the largest servicers in the country are Wells Fargo and Countrywide, but they are not necessarily servicing a mortgage that they own. It's owned by a trust. So in many cases, it's difficult to get a hold of the actual mortgage owner to get any kind of settlement worked out.
Madam Chair, just an observation and a comment. With everything that's already gone on in terms of additional tools at the disposal of mortgagees, I still question whether or not we need a 20-page bill with highly prescriptive mechanisms when, frankly, I think what I heard from the Attorney General's office is that the calls are because people are unable to reach their lender. Maybe we need a bill that somehow facilitates a more direct connection between the lender and the mortgagee. If that's the entire value of this thing, then we're using a sledgehammer on a tack, and maybe there's a more kind of point solution as compared to a big new process that kind of fundamentally changes the relationship between a mortgagee who freely entered a contract with a lender. So I'll leave that as my opinion.
It's an argument that I lost on another bill I was working with at several places, that, you know, 31 states have seen fit to do this, so why shouldn't we do it? But
31 states don't have
a bill. Was it 31 or 14?
14. 30, well, no, another bill I was working on. But finding a cure for cancer, that turned out to be controversial.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, when you use that, we don't know what other laws other 14 states have. The big thing is that we know what Minnesota already has, and those other states may have not done that. And I think there are some simpler things that we can do that might touch on some issue here without this great big thing in light of all the others that we have.
We have two people. Do you want to make a brief, really? I assume your caucus is as valuable as ours, so. Representative Hillstrom, do you have a comment on?
Madam Chair, if I could just actually make a comment, I'll make a couple of sentence comment after the folks testify that want to make statements.
Someone from the County Recorders Association wants to testify, and also Ms. Lee from.
Can Madam Chair, Representatives. I'm Kay Rookie. I'm the Martin County Recorder of Fairmont, Minnesota. I'm also President of the National Association of County Recorders and Election Officials and Vice President of the Property Records Industry Association, which is a national business and government partnership based model standard property record structure for our government. We do highly respect the effort that's been put in by Representative Hillstrom and her concern for foreclosures. We see it every day. We deal with it every day in our offices, county recorders. But we do have a very large concern over the Article 2, and I am representing the Minnesota County Recorders Association and bringing up some questions about that recording fee. Right now, we have $46 flat statewide fee. This is the national model. We have no other documents. All of our documents statewide are $46. Added or anything to this, and we have created a model throughout the United States for this. If we increase this or go with Article 2 on this, it will increase the recording fee for just a few documents to $171. Right now, 25% or $10.50 of each recorded document goes to the state general fund at this present time. Our concern is that this is a unfunded mandate for county offices, which increase our staff resources. It increases our costs in mailing for returning documents for rejection. We do have turnaround considerations that we have worked on in our model legislation for $46. And we'll have to mail this out to national customers. This isn't just Minnesota customers. We have to be concerned with our funding for our software and for the programming of that when the inception of this and during the sunset of this project. Our concern is that this also affects the other offices in county government. And right now, county government can't afford any more mandates, funded or unfunded. We right now are going through our line item details. This is our second year of cutting simply pens and pencils to save our staff. And this does bring a cost to our office. Whether it's funded or unfunded, it's really prohibitive for our county government to handle right at this time. So we do applaud the concerns for counseling or the mediation. And we understand all these concerns because we see the foreclosure issues daily. We see it through our assessor's office. We work with the sheriff's offices in our cities to give them data on foreclosures, and we deal with the documents that have come across our desk. But we do, as a Minnesota County Recorder, strongly oppose this funding. Thank you.
Can you refresh my memory? I seem to recall that there was some sort of additional recorder's fee of some kind that was put in law in 2006, and what that—I can't remember what that is and what it's for, and if it fits into this $46.
Madam Chair, that in 2006, that was the $46 recording fee, and what it did create is a lot of transparency and accountability in the recording fees. It broke down each piece of the recording fee and put it into categories, for instance, a county fund, a technology fund, and then the state general fund of the $10.50. That was, it also created some standards for us. We had huge turnaround times. They were taking very long times. We've written into law that those times are accelerated into a very fast action. In 2011, we have 5 days for electronic recording and 10 days turnarounds for our regular paper. So we've got a tight time
frame.
We need staff.
Madam Chair, some portion of that $46 is dedicated to the county recorders for technology. Did I hear you say that correctly?
Yes, it is. We have two different funds that we use or fund, and a portion of that goes into an account that we use specifically for technology to update our systems to keep technology on top of it. And then we also have an account that goes into our land records funding, which generally helps our county government work with GIS projects, which we haven't been able to afford in the future or in the past or in the future. So.
Madam Chair, just my conclusion would be that we already have dedicated funding. I would hope to be able to implement this change in fee.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Lee, really quickly, we really need to get out.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International and our Family Centers, and I'm also speaking on behalf of a number of other agencies and consumers. I'd like to address the issue as far as the recording fee. I do know that homeowners are willing to pay the recording fee. It gets passed on to them anyway, just as Representative Hillstrom said. And whether it is just for those who use it and not covering those who do not use it, and therefore the fee is higher, they'd be willing to pay that. The other thing is the system needs to be set up because they're expecting another wave of foreclosures around 2012. And if you have this mediation in place, this wave of foreclosures can be averted. From the bank's standpoint of their funds into it and their concerns, the homeowner has about 5 to 30% of their own money in as down payment. The federal insurance pays about 70 to 95% as far as backing the mortgages. And same with the private insurers. I think briefly you talked about who is covering the mortgages and so forth. So ultimately, if these homes are foreclosed and the funds that are insured goes to the banks, it's really the consumers and the taxpayers who end up paying this. What they are offering is financial people and legal people to do meaningful workouts to be able to have the person save their home in a way that they have not dealt with it before. So this calls for creative financing. The community land trusts have talked about separating house from the land as one means. Whether there's adjustable rates is another, but within means so that it doesn't reach the predatory lending aspect of things. And this is why you do need the person. As far as counselors, I just wanted to address the person because the banker, because I'm a former corporate auditor, banker, realtor, and I do legal advocacy. But I've also gone through the counseling program and have done some evaluations of it. It is not effective to the means that this mediation is needed and fills the gap. And the numbers that he's talking about, the thousands of people sending out letters to thousands of people that they can help with counseling, is not that they've been helped, and that's what has happened. And also, homeownership is one of four entities that have the counseling agencies, and the other agencies have not been tapped. Housing committee has heard from people from the homeownership, within the homeownership network, that they are unable to reach banks, and therefore they need more staff and more money to deal with this. And those funds could be saved. And so I just wanted to point out also that when you're dealing with people that have pay cuts, job loss, uninsured medical, et cetera, you do need these legal and financial people to do the meaningful workouts to save their homes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Hillstrom, last couple of comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the county recorder's concern. We do allow them to keep a portion of the funds, and it's sent the rest. And this started off as the same fee across everybody, and this body wanted the fees the way they are. So I'm fine with whatever the body wants to do to pay for it.
Okay. I think, particularly if we're trying to avoid a governor's veto and we're trying to agree with the Senate, and I think there'll probably be changes as this goes on. But I feel comfortable voting now to move it out and move it on to finance at this point. Any further discussion? All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you, members.
Okay. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.